for the introduction. I was actually just going to say I want to give a little background about myself, even though this presentation about myself isn't about myself, just so you know why I have data from Maryland and why I have data from Maine, and that doesn't really make sense. So I did my master's at the University of Maryland, but I'm a northerner by heart, so I said, well, I'll keep working on this project because I do love this project, but I've got to move back to Maine. And so I do part-time work on this project, but then I'm also a part-time farmer. So I run a vegetable CSA with my mom in Maine. So some of the data that I'm going to present is from a real farm. Okay, so I'm going to talk today about low-residue cover crops for organic no-till. And I also want to preface it by saying that I'm going to talk a lot about forage radish, but I don't want this concept to be lost of the low-residue cover crops. So I think part of what I hope to inspire is this idea of extending the concept of low-residue cover crops for organic no-till. So this is an organic crowd. I don't need to explain to you the difficulties in no-till organic because we can't use herbicides. Weeds are a huge problem. Most of the research that has addressed this issue has relied on high residue systems to create a weed suppressing mulch. But they mature late, they can be hard to kill mechanically. They can create a cold soil, which is not optimal for a lot of crops. They keep the moisture in the soil, which is great in the heat of the summer, but not so great in early spring. And a lot of these high residue crops can also immobilize nutrients. So, in conclusion, these systems that people have developed are great for certain things, but they just don't work for early season crops, especially vegetable crops like spinach, peas, carrots. So, what if you could get the weed suppression, which is the real issue that we're dealing with in organic, without the mulch? It's kind of a weird concept. It's maybe a concept that we wouldn't have come up with, except after meeting this cover crop, forage radish, it sort of inspired this idea. So I know there are a lot of folks in the room who have done research on forage radish. Forage radish looks like this in the fall, and then in our region, the Northeast, it winter kills, and then in the spring it leaves this totally clear, residue-free seed bed. So you get the weed suppression, but you don't have that high amount of residue. And I'll talk a little bit about the functionality of it. But so there's this question, well, can it have a warmer seed bed, drier seed bed, and faster nutrient mineralization in spring to address the needs of those early spring crops? I have a picture literature review. I don't have all the citations, but all these concepts I'm going to talk about have been researched, like I said, by many of the folks in the room. So you got your soil profile. You've got this big radish, and a lot of farmers think it's that big tuber that's really doing the work, and it's not. It's this little taproot that drills down into the soil, alleviating soil compaction, which has been a feature of the forage radish that farmers are really excited about. It also has all these little side roots, and it captures a lot of nutrients very deep in the soil profile. It has a really deep rooting depth, brings those nutrients up, and recycles them. It's very common for the radish to capture 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Obviously, it depends on how much nitrogen is there, but in vegetable systems in particular, vegetables aren't very efficient users of nitrogen, so there can be a lot of residual nitrogen in the soil profile. Weed suppression. Like you saw, there's this amazing weed suppression in spring after forage radish, and when people started looking into it, they thought that it was something allelopathic, but Yvonne Lawley did her dissertation on this and found that it's actually just light competition that prevents those fall germinating weed seeds, so you never see them in spring. So that early canopy closure is really essential to the functionality of forage radish. Like I said, it winter kills as long as the winter is cold enough, so you don't have to worry about killing it. At first, it leaves this sort of mat on the soil surface, then that quickly disintegrates and you get this bare soil surface. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our results from Maryland. I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of our methodology. If you have questions, of course, you can ask them. But I just want to share the pictures and the ideas and hopefully inspire people. So I did look at soil moisture, since that's one of the key issues in spring for people, as both as far as actually being able to get on the field, but also just not doing damage when you do get on the fields in spring. So we looked at oat as kind of the traditional winter-killing cover crop, since we were interested in winter-killed systems, and radish. And what I want to show here is that after every rain event, you can see on the bottom there, it takes the oat, which is the green line, quite a bit of time to dry down. And then that dotted line there is 80% of the plastic limit. And so that's kind of been determined as the moisture level at which you won't really do as much damage if you drive or till the soil. So it's very infrequent that that green line goes below the 80% plastic limit. But when you have forage radish there, it dries down pretty quickly. And so that equals, this is just sort of workable days. That means that when you've got oat and you've got that high residue on there, there are very few days in early spring when you can get on the field without risking doing damage to the soil. But when you have radish there, there are a lot more days. So forage radish workable field days is about equal to no cover crop workable field days. So I think when farmers say, well, I don't want to grow a cover crop because it's going to hinder my spring field work, they say, well, it dries out actually pretty quickly. This is a photo from Massachusetts, just to give you the visual in case the message wasn't clear enough. It really dries out the soil, so especially in heavier textured soils, this is a huge advantage. I did want to talk a little bit about the subsoil moisture, because I know that's a concern that people have with cover crops in general, not so much on the East Coast, but in other places. And so I looked at the subsoil moisture and found that after radish winter kills, then you can see a noticeable increase in the subsoil moisture where the radish was. So the surface soil moisture dries out, the subsoil moisture increases. And so that moisture pool is there for subsequent crops to use. Soil temperature seems pretty obvious, but when you don't have a mulch there, it allows the daily temperature fluctuation. It allows the temperature to increase more during the day. So it is a warmer seed bed. And I just want to make the point that, you know, we look at growing degree days a lot, but that's really air temperature. And we need to think about soil temperature too, both in terms of germination and crop growth. So I did find here that with the cumulative soil temperature degree days, it was higher in a tilled soil, but it was much higher where there was forage radish than where there was oat. I'm not bashing oat, I'm just for high residue cover crops. I'm just saying that, you know, every cover crop sort of fills its specific niche. Okay, I'm going to cruise along here. So our results for spinach in Maryland, we got there definitely seems to be a boost in spinach yields after growing forage radish. Sometimes it's higher in the no-till than in the tilled situation. Sometimes it was about the same. You know, it's not going to be true in all soils. Some soils maybe aren't suited to no-till, but it was feasible. We did look at some other vegetable crops, and in some cases we saw some delayed maturity. Particularly in lettuce and kohlrabi. I wanted to throw in there some farmer experience pictures, because I think when we're doing research, you know, sometimes we forget that these systems do have to be adopted by farmers to make a significant impact. And we had some farmers working with us who used peas successfully, also some human-powered equipment. So that's another limitation of no-till production sometimes, is that you need specialized equipment. But we had farmers who were out there with earthways planting beets, and they did have some success. Okay, so moving farther north, here we go. Whoop, flying up to Maine. So that does move the cover crop seeding date a little bit sooner. You know, like I said, the mechanism of weed suppression is that early canopy closure, and so I found that I really have to seed these cover crops in Maine by the first week of August, or we don't get the good enough weed suppression. So that's me. These winter kill usually in about November, December up in Maine. It's a little different than Maryland. So my results from Maine. Spinach. I decided, okay, I'll do spinach again. We know that works, right? So spinach is typically, if there are any vegetable growers out there, it's kind of an annoying crop to grow. It often doesn't germinate very well and doesn't get enough nitrogen. So, but we had pretty good results. The no-till was sometimes, oh, and I had 3 planting dates of the forage radish there. The no-till was a little bit less. I don't have the stats on here. I only had 2 blocks of this, but I wanted to point out a couple things. In the fall, I did fertilize the forage radish. This is a very sandy soil. I knew it was going to be low nitrogen, so I fertilized with 50 kilograms of nitrogen in the form of mustard meal and fish meal. And then because, you know, putting fertilizer on bare soil in fall doesn't really make sense, I decided, all right, I'll compare the fall fertilized cover crop to the spring fertilized crop. So I put, at seeding time for my spinach, I put 50 kilograms onto the spinach. And so these are just really suggestive data. There are a lot of other processes happening, but to me, I think one question is, do we fertilize cover crops? Can we get more out of our cash crop if we actually fertilize our cover crops? And to me, this suggests that maybe, especially in organic systems where we don't have, you know, necessarily immediately released nutrients, that could be a way to do it. Obviously, there are a lot of other factors involved, so just sort of suggestive. I did also do carrots. I was very interested to see if root crops could respond to this system. This is a sandy soil, you know, sort of a carrot soil from a farmer's perspective. And it's also a very small seeded crop, and I think people sometimes poo-poo the idea of small seeded no-till. I found that the carrots did come up. They didn't come up quite as well as they did in the tilled soil, but they did come up. That's the picture of the no-till there. And you can see that that's a very residue-free seed bed. Another picture. Again, I did the same thing with the fertilizer and the cover crop in the fall and on the cash crop in the spring. And I actually found that, I don't remember how I did this, I actually found that the marketability of the carrots in the no-till was better than the carrots in the tilled. Am I 2 minutes? Okay. So I guess I'll just kind of cruise through. An interesting point was that the root-shoot ratio really differed when there was a when there was a cover crop versus when there wasn't, so that's something else to consider in these no-till systems and with cover crops. Conclusions. Some crops respond well to no-till seeding after forage radish in some conditions, even in cold climates, and I want to stress that because everybody always says you can't do it in the cold. Good fall cover crop growth may be more effective than spring fertilizer for increasing yields. And other low-residue winter cover crops to fill the same niche are needed. Yeah.
I apologize if I missed this, but were you able to get seasonal?
No, that's a good question. So the weeds in Maryland, the weeds tend to come around mid to late April, so that's about a month after seeding. I did it with a hoe, and I think weed control is a big question because it's a lot of weeding equipment has been designed for a tilled seed bed, and so it's not really adequate for this no-till seed bed, but the weed onset is about the same time for the no-till and the tilled. I mean, you're going to get weeds in a tilled system also. So it gives you about a month.